I'm Rayanne, and I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
I'll probably want to sit later, but I teach, so I'm used to standing and walking back and forth, so I think, make any of you sick, and I'm sorry. Wow, it's really good to be up here speaking. It's been a while since I've spoken like this, and since last, well, 2 Wednesdays ago was messing with me. You know, it's like, oh, you have to speak. You better say the right things, because, you know, if you don't, someone's going to go out and get drunk, and I have that much power. And so I had to let it go over and over. And then yesterday morning, once again, it came back, oh, Wednesday's coming. And I thought, you know, this is stupid. Let it go. And it left. And on the way over here, Stephanie had asked me, well, are you nervous? And I said, no, I wasn't. You know, I was so tired from today that I didn't have anything left to think about. So I wasn't nervous until I looked up and there are a lot of people here. So, it's okay. You know, I was told from very early on in AA that when someone asks you to do something for AA, you do it. And so I did that from the beginning and I still do it. I was born and raised in Fresno. And two really nice people. They're both alcoholics, but, you know, they're very nice people. And my dad was an alcoholic from, I don't know when he started, but he tried to get sober the year I was born, which was 1965. So I don't know how many days he has now or months. I just don't ask anymore. But in our house, there was always the big elephant. You have to remember, my dad at the time, probably only about 5'5 and weighed about 375. So there was a big elephant in the middle of our living room and drink. And I had no idea what alcoholism was. I didn't know anything about that growing up. All I knew is that when my dad went out of town, my mom, when he was coming back, my mom would throw all his clothes outside in the garage. That's all I knew. And so I was the one, I was the youngest of three, two older brothers. I'd be the one going in the garage, picking up all the stuff, and taking it back into the house. It's like, you know, don't upset mom, don't upset dad. I did that from a very, very early age. And I was the one in the family. Everything was good. If I was good, everything would be okay. And so I associated, every time my dad went out of town, and to me it was every single time that he went, you know, for business. You know, he got drunk, and I didn't know that at the time. But my mom would get mad and throw his clothes out. And one time she threw him out in the street, and here I am picking him up for neighbors. They thought, who knows? And so alcohol was not allowed in our house. Well, bottles weren't allowed in the house, really. And so I never saw any responsible drinkers. On my dad's side, it goes back, you know, we're Mexican. And so they always said the Indian fire water. And then on our Italian side, they were drunk too, making their own wine in the basement and cellar. So I have it on, and actually my mom's real father is back, and they used to do it too. So I have to come from all angles. And, which kind of growing up, my dad was really just the alcoholic. And, you know, I had two older brothers, and they always say they paved the way for me. Because they were the ones who always got in trouble, and when it was my turn, I didn't get in trouble for anything. No, I just never got caught. And my middle brother was the one that was, you know, did the jail, always in trouble, came home hitting the walls. You knew when he was drunk or, you know, loaded. And then there was me, and I was just so sweet because I was the one in the family that always took care of everybody. If mom and dad were happy, everything was good. That's how I thought. And if I did really good, if I did everything they'd say, they wouldn't be upset. They wouldn't be, you know, upset. They wouldn't be fighting. They wouldn't do any of that stuff. Well, I learned very early on how to manipulate people, so I was really good at manipulating my parents at a very early age. And when someone hurt my feelings, all I had to do was get that little pouty look and, you know, I'll talk and that kind of stuff. And mom would take me shopping because if you shop, you feel better, right? And if you eat, you feel better. That's how I was raised. And then when I got into junior high, I was 13, when you drank, you feel really good. And so, first time I tried alcohol, you know, my grandpa used to pop his cans or the lucky ones with the other ones. And I used to take the foam at the time. So that was like the first time I really drank alcohol. But when I was 13, 13, I drank, and we went to a friend's house because her parents were out of town, and so this neighbor across the street from high school kids were having a party, and I went, and I drank there, and I drank these little glasses because they said, oh, they're shots, and I just drank them like, you know, it was Kool-Aid. I didn't know that anybody could get sick off of them or black out or any of that kind of stuff, and that's exactly what happened to me. I don't know how much I drank. I blacked out. I was told I threw up. I don't remember that. I had a track meet the next morning. I didn't do very good. My dad was asking me, what is wrong with you? You know, I couldn't smell it on me, you know. But that was the first time of really drinking alcohol, and I got drunk, and I can remember that time. And then from there, it just goes on and on. In high school, it was just those, you know, Friday, Saturday night with the friends, and I was a pig back then. We'd pimp our beer or get an older brother or sister to buy it for us. And my friends would, you know, like three or four girls would have a six-pack. Like, you know, give me a 12-pack. Just give me the six-pack. I was very, you know, early on, like, no, that's mine. Because when I start drinking, I can't stop. I just, one after another, that obsession, that craving takes over, and I lose all control. And it's been like that since the very beginning. And usually, most of the time, I would black out. And which, a lot of the time that was good, because I don't remember a lot I did, but I have those great friends that would kind of remind me of things. They would tell me the whole story, and then like, I would kind of like go in and out, kind of remember, and that would just make my stomach. And then I could never physically, I said never, and I really couldn't get sick, and I still have that mechanism to get sick. So I learned in high school that if you drink, when you had a hangover, get rid of your hangover. Learned that real quick, and that was fun too. I have this thing about drinking on Sundays. I couldn't drink on Sundays because I was a good Catholic girl. And Catholics don't drink on Sundays. What I thought until I got older. And so that was like, you know, Catholic. So, you know, in high school, it was Friday and Saturday night, and I remember being at a senior in high school, and just as dead as a friend. And if this was an alcoholic behavior, I don't know what it is. We just said that I wouldn't drink for 30 days. Okay, I go to a Catholic school. I'm, you know, a good Christian and Catholic. And I'm making a bet with someone that I won't drink for 30 days. And it's on board, tally marks. We're erasing the tally marks, right? And it's religion class that we're doing this. And so, you know, and I won. I went, you know, 30 days, which that time was the weekend, you know. And so we celebrated. So they brought me a case of beer. You know, and I'm like, okay, this is my case of beer, get your own. You know, and should have known this. But when I drank, all my problems disappeared. You know, I no longer had to be a perfect child. I no longer had to take care of anybody in the family. I could be whoever I wanted. I was tall, I had big boobs, I was really skinny, and you know, I was whoever I wanted to be. You know, I always wanted to be an actress, so sometimes I'd be an actress. And alcohol took away everything that I was being. And that's why I loved it so much. You know, and I loved the party. And I must have been drinking the right stuff on that because I enjoyed it a lot. And but somewhere down the line, it turned on me. And it started to be, you know, a pain. It got to, you know, actually alcohol wasn't the pain, it was the husband that got to be a pain. But before that, you know, I did through high school and went to Fresno State, and I always felt less than, didn't feel a part of it, okay? So, and I got in high school, most likely to be remembered, okay? And crazy as right. And I still didn't feel like I belonged. So I go to Fresno State, I joined the sorority because then they'll have to like me, right? Because the only reason why these people liked me is because they were my brother's friends and they had to like me. And the only reason why these people had to like were like me because they knew me since first grade, but they had to like me. That's how I thought. So now I'm going to Fresno State and I join the sorority and I'm going to have 40 new friends, you know, women, and they're going to like me. They're going to know me. And then all of a sudden, shit, oh no, they're going to really know who I am. And they're not going to like me. So once again, I felt isolated and different. And I can look back and just literally remember, you know, sitting in a room and around chairs in a circle and just feeling like everybody was over there and I was over here. And I sitting amongst them that I just felt that different, and that's what I saw. I visually saw that I was different, and I get that feeling in my stomach that I used to get, that like, get me out of here, I don't have to do this, I'm different, you know, what's wrong with me type thing. And, you know, most of the time I would sit there and just go through it. And then as soon as I got out of there, I drank. Because that calmed it down. It calmed me down. And then, you know, everyone always said that I was, you know, hyperactive and this and that and the other thing, you know, I was like a chihuahua on crank. And so it used to really bother me. So, you know, drink alcohol is supposed to calm me down. It didn't calm me down. It's supposed to be depressing. It didn't calm me down. You know, so I started adding other things to that. And actually those things that make you hyper were calming down, I found out. It's that reverse effect on me. So I get through college, and I had a lot of fun in college, though. I should talk about my college days. Those were fun, because this was the first time without my parents. My parents bribed me. Remember, I was a big issue. I got straight A's. I got, you know, did everything they told me to do, you know, jump, you know, how high do you want me to jump? You know, because my oldest brother was really screwed up. So I was like their last hope, and I felt like I was their last hope. I put a tremendous amount of pressure on me that I can put there. If you ask them, they'll say it wasn't there, but I know it was. And everything was all about me. Still is most of the time. But in college, though, I was away from them, and I could just do whatever I wanted. So, you know, living in a sorority house, you know, partially I live on my own in an apartment, and I could drink all I wanted. And I lived in an apartment complex where everybody around me, right across the street, everybody was partying, you know, or selling or something. We just, you know, was constant. And that was a lot of fun. And I don't know how I got through college. Because I just slumped out, you know. I didn't go to class most of the time because I had hangovers. And, but I survived. And I joined a little sister in a fraternity. And they have this contest of how many beers you can drink in an hour. I thought, oh, that sounds fun, you know, drinking beer. I love to drink beer. And so I went around to, like, my friends and that I knew, guy friends, and I said, oh, will you sponsor me in this contest? And they said, sure, how much do you think you drink? Okay, I think I'm going to do 10. You know, I don't know, it's an hour in a shot. I don't know, you know. So people were, you know, giving me 10 cents. It was a fundraiser for them. 25 cents, a dollar, right? Well, that night, I was the first one at the table. You know, I was going to feel this is going to be fun. And that was a fun night. And so there's probably about 20 girls in there that did this. And at one point, they moved a cake to me. That was probably about 10 minutes into it. And I ended up drinking 121 shots in an hour. I got up halfway through, and this guy, who now is my brother-in-law from marriage, put his finger down my throat, and I just threw up beer, went back in, still had alcohol poisoning, went back in, drank more, and I still hold the record there. But they seem to really can't get up anymore. I hope to God they don't even do it anymore. I'm like, oh God, I hope my kids don't go there and see my name up there. But I had a lot of people pissed off at me because that was a dollar a shot. And so I was so embarrassed. I had a two-day hangover. I never had a two-day hangover before, but I was like too hungover to even drink. I was hurting bad. I don't even remember, you know, most of it. And so I was really embarrassed. I didn't want to ask these people, you know, for the money and stuff like that. I'm just, you know, kids for a while. And then I came back out again, because things are going to be different. And I remember a lot of college saying, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to get drunk tonight. I have class tomorrow. I'm not going to get drunk tonight because that's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to drink tonight because I got to do this, you know, and it never worked. It never worked. Oh, come on, Ryan. Come on over. Oh, okay, I'll just have one. So, and that never happened. When I start drinking, I can't stop. So, in college, I met this really, I thought it was nice back then. Guy, and he had blue eyes, and when I met him the first time, I said, I'm going to marry that guy, and I did marry him, and he drank just like me. He was an ADR, he was in a fraternity, and he wore top sliders and cheap polos, so I knew he was your typical Okie. I thought, ooh, I like him, right? Got the blue eyes, there we go. And he drank like me. He liked to party, he liked, you know, going to bars, he didn't like to dance, still doesn't. And I said, you know, this is my kind of guy. Well, I think I remember that. The rest of the day, if he didn't drink drink like me. Anybody didn't drink like me. No. My parents didn't like anybody I brought home. And that's nice ones in there. But they didn't like anybody I brought home. So I meet this guy, I graduated from Fresno State, and I'm off to law school because everybody in my family told me, like, from a very young age, like senior high, you are going to be a lawyer. You know, you can talk your way out of anything. You're determined, you're smart, blah, 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 blah. But I knew I didn't want to be a lawyer. Deep down, I thought, because I thought a lot of things in life. And I just, you know, sometimes you can get over it and make yourself do something, you can just get over it. So I thought, this is just one more thing. So I went to law school, and at the same time, my oldest brother and I got his act together, and he was going to dental school in Marquette. So my parents, and we left at the same time, and my parents were with him because he's more important. That's how I thought. It was more important for them to go to Wisconsin. Of course, you know, I was only going to Sacramento, I was going all the way to the United States. You know, it's more important for them to go with him, so they loved him more. He meant more than I did. That's how I thought. I thought everything like that. And so I went to law school, and I lasted 2 weeks at law school. I physically got sick. I hated to be called on. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. And so I was like, what am I going to do? I mean, at this point, you know, I always told boyfriends, you know, not really, I'm going to commit suicide. You know, I'm going to take all these pills if you break up with me, and that kind of stuff. I never really meant it. But this time, it was a real, I really thought about committing suicide because I would rather die than have to tell my dad that I'm quitting law school, because we don't quit anything. We never quit anything. We finish it to the end. And so I knew I had to quit. I had to do it. I could not go on like this anymore. And so I was sober. You know, I picked up the phone. I called them. They were in Wisconsin, and I called them. And my dad, all I heard was, you're a quitter. You're a loser. Give it a chance. You haven't even been there a month. You know, don't do this to me. You know, I heard all those kind of things. My mom got on the phone, and back then, you know, my dad was the alcoholic. My mom was the codependent at the time, but I took everything out of my mom. My mom and I were like oil and water. We just never got along. I just took everything out on her. Always, always her fault. If she wasn't this, my dad wouldn't drink. That's how I fought when I was growing up. So we never got along, but my mom got on the phone, and she said something, and all of a sudden she said, nothing is worth taking your life. And I never said anything to her except, like, Mom, I don't want to be here or something. And she knew, like, sound in my voice, I still think it was a blessing. She knew what I was thinking. And just by saying that, you know, that gave me permission to say it's okay. I had to get permission. I was 21 years old, you know? And I quit because I didn't want to talk to my dad. I mean, I hung up the phone. I didn't want to talk to him. He might change my mind. So I went the next day and I quit law school. And of course, I'm a loser because I just quit something. And I went to Sacramento. They have, you know, the fair was going on, the talent stuff. So I did my three favorite things in the world to do. I sat on the horses. I drank and I smoked cigarettes all day long. And it was great. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't get drunk. I couldn't get, like, fall down drunk, and I probably was drunk. And all of a sudden, it came to me, like, 6 o'clock at night. Oh, my God, you have to do something with your life. Today, you have to do something, because you just quit law school, you have no job, you better do something, you better figure it out right now. Because the way I was raised, you always had a backup plan. If this didn't work, you always could do this. Well, I had no backup plan. I just dropped out, and I was a big loser now. Okay, now what am I going to do? Because you know what I was thinking? I think, oh no, what are my parents' friends going to say? What are they going to say about this? Because all I cared about was everybody's opinion about me. That's the way I was raised. You know, growing up, I was completely pressed. I was had everything I wanted. I never, you know, I was manipulated some really good things. And I was very fortunate. I grew up in a family where I could have anything I wanted and got it. And so it was more important. Money was more important in your status and who you were with than your happiness and how I grew up. So I come to that I have to do something. So I called my boyfriend at the time and I said, I'm drunk and I need to do what I'm going to do with my life. And he's like, okay, well, why don't you come home? I can't. I'm drunk. I can't drive. Take the train. Oh, I didn't think about that. But he's just like already thinking kind of home. So I get on the train, I come don't drink anymore. You know, I have to drink all the way to get there. And he's 16 and I'm like, what am I going to do with my life? Because I have no right then and there. You know, no matter what I think, you're out in the middle. And he goes, why don't you become a teacher? And I swear I should have been dead yet. Because every teacher in my family, they were fat, mean, dowdy, and were polyester. And they were black and brown. And I did not, and the other ones were the nuns that I grew up with. So Catholic. Are you crazy? And of course, that's what I do today, and I absolutely love it. And I think, you know, God put David, my husband, in my life for a reason. And he has saved me lots of times, and that was one of them. I wanted to kill him at the time, but I let him survive. And then, so I married that SOB, and I moved to Corcoran. Now, Fresno is not that big, but it's pretty big. And I was the type that always said, she'll end up in New York or L.A. or San Francisco because that's the kind of lifestyle I like. I was fast, and, you know, I had lots of, you know, go ahead, always on the move. And that's what I was. And so I ended up in Corcoran, and I felt like I hit a brick wall. There was nothing to do there. And one more time, I'm thinking, okay, I'm moving. I'm going to have a bunch of new friends, because, you know, David's friends like me, and all his family's from there. So I moved there, and it didn't take 3 months, and all of a sudden, old tapes came back. They're only nice to you because they're David's friends. They're only nice to you because they're David's, you know, parents, family friends that they've had forever. They have to be nice to you. And that's how I really thought. And so, you know, the only reason why I got a teaching job there was because of David's family. You know, I mean, poor me. And so, wouldn't you drink? So I drank, you know, and kind of a joke in Corcoran that you either have a really good marriage or you drink. And so the first 5 years I drank, and I drank really hard. I started drinking a lot more. In college, well, actually right before I graduated from high school, I wouldn't drink on Sunday, that changed. Because I found out Catholics drink on Sunday. They have lots of wine on those streets and stuff and start partying with those brothers in the streets. So I gave that. And the college, it became the Monday night after the meeting, and then the Wednesday night exchanges, and then Thursday night, you got to drink, right? And then there's always a weekend. And then you try to recuperate on Sunday. You start all over again. So, you know, it just progressed. But, you know, I was alcoholically drinking long before that. So I get married, and I moved to this town, and I'm hating it because I don't belong. One more time. And so I decide. My friends keep telling, the friends I grew up with, are still living in Fresno, saying, you know, you have married the best guy. You are so lucky. So I saw that as, I need to go help him find a husband. So I had my son, Philip, and so, you know, Gabe is such a great husband. He's probably a great father. And he is. He really is. So I had to go out with my friends and some new friends that I met to help him find a husband because I was, you know, not such a great guy. So what I was doing is just drinking in the bar. That was my really good excuse. Well, I have to go with Gina because she needs help. Now, and he just would look at me like I believe you really believe in me. And that went on for a while, and my drinking got worse and worse and worse. And it got to the point, before I had my second child, I would do things like, when I cook dinner, I don't cook dinner anymore, but when I used to cook dinner, I'd make these great big, huge dinners. Isn't that what you're supposed to do? You know, no one gave me a book on how to be a wife or mother. So I'm cooking it, you know, Jim Cleaver with the dress and it's beautiful, you know, me and my husband getting fat and eating all the food. But I would drink wine as I was cooking food. That's a perfect excuse. So I would drink, you know, a glass or two, and then we'd have dinner, and my husband would drink his glass, maybe. Can't remember. He drank like me. He did. I know he did. I wouldn't have dated him. But he's not, like, finishing his glass. He maybe has a beer or two. Maybe once or twice a year he gets drunk. Okay? So something really happened with him. He grew up. We had to start out as kids, and he grew up. I just never grew up. An alcoholic. So I made dinner, and then he's a farmer, so he has to go to bed or he gets up for later. So I take that bottle of wine, and I finish it off. And I'm cleaning dishes, too, as somebody used to do. And so he goes to bed, and I go out. We could belong to the wine of the month club. It was such a nice thing to do. I belong to the wine of the month club. And we get cases of wine. So we had a refrigerator outside that was, you know, real low. So we had all this wine in a triple grab the same bottle. Go back inside, drink it down to where I thought it was, And then I said, yeah, the bottle, put it in a paper bag and throw it outside. He never knew I did that. And I did that for quite a few years. Never knew I did that. So then, second kid comes, and by this, actually, my dad and brother got sober about, so 8 years before I did the first time. They got sober about 8 years before I did. And right before I got married, I used to go to speaker meeting in Fresno every Thursday night. All welcome speaker meetings from the village group. And my dad used to be the cake man there. So I would just go with him because I love to hear the story. But as soon as they start talking about sobriety, I would cut off. And but I had a little bit of AA and my teeth was fine. So I knew it was getting bad. I went through a lot of therapy. You know, everyone in my family knew I had a problem with my weight. I would take lots of drugs for it, diet pills, X-lax, exercise, you name it, I did it. And not a lot, but the drinking I hid from it. They just had no clue. My husband did, but the rest of my family did. So after a long time of, okay, you know, I took the alcohol test, I lied on it, of course. No, I'm not one of those. And finally, after a long time of therapy, I said, okay, I'll go to the eating disorder hospital. Well, it was the beginning of school, and it's 93. And I said, I can't go because I have to start the school year. You know, those poor kids, they need me. You know, what kind of teacher am I? You know, hangovers and grumpy and grouchy. So then Chris was great me. And I couldn't go then because I didn't want to ruin my own children for Christmas. Of course, they were 1 and 3, and I ruined it anyway. And then came, you know, Easter. Well, that's only a week long. I can't be gone for 30 days. What would the school district say? They might find out. They might think I'm a bad person. So finally, in June of 94, I had no more teeth. So I went to an eating disorder hospital. June 6, 1994 was the first day that I quit drinking. I got drunk the night before because I knew I had enough AA in me to know that was going to be my last drunk. It was going to be my last of anything. Because I knew that if I was to come clean, if I would have any chance of life, I had to come clean with everything. And so I made sure I had like, you know, all the things I needed to do, knowing, you know, that this was it. And so I went to that eating disorder hospital, and I went down and anorexic bulimic and came out an alcoholic. And I loved it. It was my back door, my back way in to Alcoholics Anonymous. And while I was down there, I went to AA meetings and NA meetings and OA meetings and any meeting they wanted that I'd go. But it was very freeing. For once in my life, I felt okay. I was with a bunch of women and one man. A bunch of women and one man that had the same problem as me. And I left that place. They kicked me out after 2 weeks because I wasn't bad enough. Get that one. Because if I was in a rehab, or an alcoholic rehab, they would have paid for it because I was an eating disorder. I wasn't bad because I didn't want to tell them I had stopped committing suicide. I actually had a plan one time because I was afraid they would put me in a straitjacket and take me off. Was that, you know, I didn't know that that's, you know, we go there and talk about that. They don't do that to you for an insurance purpose. Well, they would have told me it was for an insurance purpose because I would have told them that. So I left. But you know what? It was very good because I paid for those 2 weeks. I paid for them out of my money, out of my paycheck. I didn't let my husband pay for it. I paid for it. So anyway, and they suggested, strong suggested that I go to meetings. And I did, and I started going to meetings right there. In Tulare, and I met up with a lot of good people, and I got a sponsor, my first sponsor, who was a very nice woman and everything, and, you know, told me to call her and do this and do that. Well, I just didn't feel comfortable. One day, my dad was talking to me, and he said, so, have you talked to your sponsor? I said, no, she hasn't called me. And he goes, and she's not going to either, honey. And I just didn't get it yet, you know, I'm only like 2 months sober now. And so my dad said, you know, why don't you try calling Eddie? And Eddie is related to me. Her husband and my mom were first cousins. So, my mom and her husband, yeah. And so I called Eddie, and about 3 months over, Eddie was instantly like mom for everything. And I love her to death. She was a step knock to the combat boots on, and I've had her boot up my butt so many times, but it's exactly what I needed. You know, I can't manipulate her. I can't, oh, poor little Leanne, you know. Doesn't let me do that. She pulls my cousin. She's taught me so much. And what I love about her the most is that she won't take any credit. You know, she's a true heart of power. You know, told me to work those steps, and as overachiever that I am, I'm going to have all of them done in 30 days. You watch. I'm going to get a push alcoholic and I'm going to have Well, about 9 months later,
still working on it.
But I did, you know, I was an overachiever all my life. But I got them done, and I needed that 4 step, you know. I don't want to tell anybody that stuff. But I'm really grateful. I don't know what it was, but I trusted Eddie from the very beginning. And we had an incident that happened where my parents called her to talk about me. And she didn't open her mouth, and she immediately called me to tell me that. And I knew I could trust her. I knew I could trust her because, you know, here my family, they're concerned about me, you know, 6 months sober or something, that, you know, I wasn't doing the right thing, that they were going to tell her how to tell me to run my program. So I knew I could trust her. And that's how I found out of it. And so, but I love them. That's who they are. And so I worked those steps. I got through that 4 step, and I remember telling you, just get everything out. Nope, I got it all out. This is it. My whole thing. Okay, we burned it. It was flying away. I said goodbye to it. All that stuff. But this is one little thing that I wasn't going to tell anybody about. 5 years into sobriety, that new thing came back to haunt me. And I was going insane. That was the only time in my 14 years that I ever wanted to drink. And it was something that had happened to me, but I wasn't going to tell anybody about it. So I did it. And once again, she asked me, is there anything else? I said, no, I'm done now. I swear. I don't want to go through that again. And I know it was, but got it all out. You know, except when I do things now, you know, I do 10 step on them. But, you know, I said I was going to have those steps done in 30 days. I continually work those steps. I do 1, 2, and 3. I can't say I do them every day. You guys, I forget some days. I get going. I get too important. You know, 1, 2, and 3 is I can't, he can't, I'll let him. And then I try to do a 10 step, you know, at night. And sometimes I forget. But when I'm really in pain, I know when I'm in pain or I really get this good feeling is that I can't sleep. I toss and turn. And when I'm tossing and turning, I know something's wrong. So I get up. I start thinking about my day. If I need to write it down, if I can just think it out. And then I say, okay, this is what I need to do. And then I pray about it. If it's something I'm not sure what to do, I pray about it and I go to bed. And usually the first thing when I wake up, that's my first thought. And that's the way it's been with me. You know, I've been, lots of things in sobriety I've had to contemplate. And I was really good about taking polls. Well, what do you think? Well, what do you think? Well, what do you think? And then I was lazy when it didn't work. So I couldn't do that anymore. And so I learned that if I was quiet enough, it's really hard for me to do. And just not think, which is really hard for me to do. Like sometimes I have to sit in the closet and turn off the light and shut the door, you know? And, but if I prayed about it and just let it go, that was my first thought in the morning to get to. And that, it's just been something that is given to me. And I thank God I have it and I didn't have to struggle. Now that doesn't mean I don't struggle because I can sit with something for a long time before I turn it over. You know, and that's where, you know, I'm miserable and you don't want to be around me. But, you know, after working those steps, I was going to lots of meetings in Visalia and Tulare. My sponsor told me, you know, actually I was a year sober and said, you need to go to a women's meeting. I said, no way, they are so mean. I am not going to a women's meeting. And she goes, I just tried for 30 days. 30 days? That's way too long. That's 4 meetings. I go, okay. So I went for 30 days and I kept going and I kept going and I kept going and I kept going. And the only reason why I don't go today is because my sponsor pulled a fast one on me. She, about five, six years ago, my sponsor said, isn't it about time you can give back to your community? I said, what do you mean? I can do more community work. I do lots of this. I can do better. I said, no, AA. I go, oh. She goes, you said that meeting was really small and stuff, and that, you know, they were stopping it and this and that. I said, why don't you go to the meeting? Okay. That's what I've been doing every Tuesday night since then, for the last 5 or 6 years. And I've been the treasurer now. I gladly try to give it up to people, but no one gets enough time. But actually, that meeting is my home group. I celebrate there. I try to bring people there. You know, it's really actually a very humbling meeting for me. And I've met a lot of good people there. And sometimes it's really hard, really, really hard, because I need to hear sobriety. I need to hear what people are doing in recovery. I need to hear long-term sobriety, you know, not just the newcomer. I can get a lot of just the newcomers. I need it all. And so that's why I still have to get out and go to different meetings. Also, about 8, 9 years ago, I asked my sponsor, I said, you know, I feel like I'm missing out on my kids. My dad didn't get sober when I was 20 years old or so. I mean, I really tried to get sober. He had 15 years. And so, you know, I grew up with, you know, my dad never home, or, you know, he was an alcoholic, or, you know, those kind of things. And I didn't want to do that to my kids. So when they were pretty young, probably about age 7 and 5, I said, you know, I'm kind of having a problem with this. Isn't it about time to become a mom? And that hurt. Because David has been raising the kids. He was the one, you know, when I was drinking, he was the one raising it. When, you know, I was in AA meetings, you know, I went to a lot of AA meetings, he was the one raising them. And so then I was getting this resentment because they liked him better than me. And I didn't want that because, you know, I wanted my daughter and I to be, you know, I didn't want us to be best friends, but I want her to be, you know, my daughter, and I wanted my son to be my son and everything. It's not like that. So anyway, I spent a lot of time with my kids, and actually it has paid off. You know what? My son just was all around me and tells me he loves me. I was telling these guys this last weekend. Me and Corcoran for a homecoming, they do an snake craze down Main Street, the band and everything. So he's in the band, he's a drummer. And he gets around by me and he goes, I love you, Mom! And out front of everybody, he's got a senior in high school, 17 years old. And David looked at me, what was that for? I go, Mom! You know? And that was just meant the world to me, you know, that this kid didn't care. Now my daughter, I don't know what I am, but I'm just like, she just like gets away from me. I try to hug her, but it's like what I did with my mom, doing embarrassment, all that kind of stuff. I try to talk to her, and I have done everything. And you know what? We are like this. And I think what I do is I try way too hard. I said I wasn't going to become my mother, but you know what? I become my mother. You know, it's like, oh, and I don't mean to do it. So I really try. This last couple of days, really, God, just let me let it go. If she doesn't want to talk to me, let's make sure she has someone she can talk to. I got to let it go. Because it's killing me that we don't have that relationship. You know, that some people have. I mean, I have it with my son, but I don't have it with my daughter. But when David was raising those kids and I was having that resentment, those kids come to me now. And they know I'm going to be there. Mom, will you take me here? Mom, will you go with us to this field trip? Mom, will you chaperone this dance? I'm after Father. Heck no, you embarrass me. Yeah, that's what they say. You know, and it's not, you know, and it's really cool. My son came to me about 2 months ago, and he told me that he has some issues. He goes, Mom, I want to go see a doctor, and I think it's okay. He got body color, you know, what's wrong with him? He goes, I want to go see one of those doctors. He goes, I want to talk to someone. I was just 17 years old, and he's coming to me. He's not doing the drugs. He's not doing the alcohol. He's tired of waiting. And that alcohol is not getting back. If I wasn't sober, that would have not happened. Now, my daughter, we're still hope for her. She's 15. But, you know, alcohol is not has truly saved my life. I got into service. I did some Asian eye work. I did a lot. You know, I secretary meetings, the treasurer of meetings, started some new meetings in corporate. And then, you know, I took in some time off to raise the kids, and it just paid back. And then, you know, they're getting ready to leave and, you know, go right back into AA. And because, you know, I don't know what I do without you. You know, I don't know. I know I have another drunk in me. I know I do. I don't know if I have another recovery. I don't want to take that chance. You know, there's certain things that I do. I try to do every single day. And as I do my daily prayer and meditation, Diana and I have been meditation buddies for years, you know, 4 or 5 years. I don't know. Before that, it was with Bubba when he was working. We'd call each other, and I'd read it, and I'd forget what it was, you know, by an hour later. With Diane, we'd highlight it. Getting smarter. You know, we talk about it. And then, you know, I'm in my classroom, and it's quiet, because I go to work really early, because no one there to plug me. I'm there at 6 o'clock, and there's no one there. And I can, you know, I can pray and meditate. I can just sit there, and I can get on with my day. And I have, you know, sponsors that call me. You know, I got someone who calls me about every day. There's someone that calls me. You know, or someone in the program. Sponsors that call a little bit more often. Anyway, you know, I stay connected. I open up one of my cabinets. It's got the acceptance prayer in there. You know, this too shall pass. I have little slogans all around the inside of my cabinet. The kids ask me what that means. This too shall pass. And they just look at me. Well, this pass eventually, you know, bring it down to their room. And, you know, I try to do what I've been told to do. And I have to be honest with myself. I can't be honest with myself. I can't be honest with you. You know, I've met a lot of good people in this program. I have a lot of good friends, women and men. You know, it's funny because Bubba is like, he hates when I say it, but he's like another dad, and he is like my dad. The dad that wasn't there emotionally for me has been Bubba. I can call him about anything, and he can tell me like it is, you know, or sometimes just to have a shoulder to cry on. And I got to spend the night at Bubba's house. Yep, we're going fishing. My husband, trust me, I trust Bubba in that, but I could spend the night there. You know, he's not threatened by them. He knows what kind of relationship he has. He's invited, his family's invited at my house, and I'm invited to their house. And you know, from what I hear, that's a strange thing for men and women to have a relationship like that. It's not strange for me. You know, today, I'm honest. I try to work an honest program. I can't say I'm honest all the time. I try to work an honest program. And that's from everything, from the, you know, telling a kid something, you know, you need to tell kids a little white lie. You know, and then you'll want them to do that too. You know, to anything, to big things, to hiding things. You know, your sick is your secret. I hate that thing, but it's the best thing, you know. And it's so true for me. And, you know, I know that if I keep doing those things, the prayer and the meditation, working with steps, working with others, having a sponsor, you know, if I keep doing these things, and most importantly, to hold it all together, is a higher power and that relationship I have with them, you know, the chances of me staying sober are greater. You know, if I give up one of those things, I don't know if that's going to be the thing that's going to get me drunk. I don't know if that's going to be the thing that, you know, is going to ruin it all. And I don't want to ruin it today. You know, I've got so much going for me, and I did not realize when I got sober this it would be like this. You know, people would say that, you don't know what life's like. You know, it's true. And I'm not talking about the material things. I could give up, and I have given up those material things in sobriety. You know, I just always wanted to fit in. I didn't want to stand out because I've always stood out. Either my loud mouth or, you know, with what I drove or, you know, what I wore, who I hung out with, what, you know, what I was doing. I just wanted to blend in, and I blend in here, and it feels really good. And I was able to practice here and take it out there. And I just, most of the time, try to blend in there. And today, those feelings of uselessness, self-pity, you know, a lot of those fleeting moments. I still get them. You know, I got them from what am I going to say? I might get somebody drunk if I say the wrong thing. You know, those kind of things. The thing that's all about me. You know, when I first used to get my shift, and congratulations to those of that shift, I thought it was all about me. I used to go to Friday night bills through being jump up and down because, you know, that shift, I thought I got, you know, yeah, I was happy, but that's okay. Brian, sit down, calm down, stay a while. You know, today it's not like that, you know. It really is a great life. I have a relationship with my husband today that I didn't ever think could be imagined. No one gave you a book, and I did not get it from my parents, trust me. You know, I can only probably stay in a room with them for a couple hours, and I got to leave. You know, if people like you have taught me, I've listened to you, what you do in certain situations, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about, is one person talking to another about your experience, strength, and hope. And right now, our friend gave you Sunday night, Sandy Beach's tape, and it's everything you wanted to know about AA and afraid to ask. And I tell you, I am cracking up in class, and I start tutoring at 7:30, I gotta turn it off, and I'm afraid the little kids are gonna walk in, what AA? You'll see it in a couple years, kids. You can already hear that. Thanks for letting me share tonight. Thank you for asking.